I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for murders that defy explanation, mystery seeking exploration, and shocking secrets that will leave you breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Anytime you get good players in front of you, it makes it easier. You know, we got a bunch of them, you know, with the rookies, Dion and TJ, those guys coming in, they've shown, you know, just how valuable they can be. You know, it's hard without pads, but I think you get an idea of, you know, just how valuable they're going to be up front. And you got guys like Larry, who came in and he's been great, knows the system already, is versatile, you know, can play multiple positions. It's been good to just, you know, be around these guys, you know, understand them, let them understand me, and, you know, the value of, you know, getting those reps together.
Terrell Bernard. One more day of Bills quote practice tomorrow, and then it'll be weeks. 5 weeks. Sal was saying how the calendar starts earlier this year once they get to summer, but I'm not sure I understand why. Like, Labor Day is September 1st. Last year was the 2nd. It wasn't like it was a week later or anything like that. Sometimes it could be, what, the 7th. So I don't know why it would be. Did you understand?
I think it's there's a number of days that camp can begin before your first game or before the first game of the season for anyone, or maybe it's your first game. And I think that is all that is. And it's okay. I think he said last year was the 24th, this year could be the 23rd. So that tracks with the 2nd and the 1st, Labor Day being, you know, only a day different. Yeah, but often it's like July 26, 27, somewhere in there. So it does, you know, it's just Father's Day is earlier. Everything's earlier this year.
Father's Day is early. It's early as it can be.
Yep.
15th. Friday the 13th this week. That's the earliest that can be, the 13th. Friday the 13th. It's never earlier.
That's how that works. Yeah.
You know, can I make a personal comment, please?
Sure, go on.
Being accused in a chat, in a draft chat, of sniping somebody with a pick, like personally, like a, it wasn't a pick that this person thinks made sense for my team, that I just took this player because the guy behind me needed him. One, sir, I can assure you that that is not what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even look to see who was on your team. Two, so what if I did?
Right.
Is that wrong?
We're competing here.
We are competing. Perfectly put. We are competing here. If I take a player that makes my team worse and yours, am I really doing such a bad thing? Maybe I'm not. You have on Underdog all the time. You have people, it looks like anyway, that they see your team and they feel like the move is, like you're on the end and they pick at 2 going backwards. So they're going to take the player you need. And it does sometimes seem like that's intentional, like that's why they're making that pick, which is this person's point about what I did. But I still think it's, what can you do about it? Like, it's not against the rules. You pick whoever you want.
Right.
I think you're maybe not so smart if you're taking, I have Chase and Higgins and you take Burrow. Like, I don't think that's a great draft pick. I could appreciate why you don't want me to get him.
Right.
Because then I have Chase, Higgins, and Burrow.
Right.
But okay, you want to do that and just clog a spot with a quarterback that you'll have no targets for or whatever. Okay. I got bad news. You're not going to win $1 million. Good for you, though. The odds that I am are extremely thin anyway. And maybe they got a little bit worse because you took Burrow.
Right.
Anyway, that's all.
Yeah, how often do you know? I can't believe I actually have a follow-up question.
Let's go.
But I really do. How often do you pay attention to what is going on around you? Like the teams that you are competing against? Because in a situation like that, taking Burrow, if this person has Chase and Higgins, would be a good defensive move by you. Now, you might rather have a quarterback that you can pair with one or, well, in this case, two receivers for yourself, right? If you've got a couple of guys and that quarterback is there. But Burrow is still going to put up huge numbers. You're not going to have the tandem, and that, again, that's tough. But still, he's going to put up huge numbers, and you're keeping that guy who you're competing with from having that benefit.
All I can tell you is it's not worth it.
Really?
In a tournament where by week 15 you're getting repotted if you had a good enough team in the regular season, and what are we saying? I have Burrow without those two guys.
Right.
I'm going to play somebody who has him with those two guys or one of them. The way the drafts fall this year,
okay.
Chase is like 101, Higgins is 2-3 turn, so is Chase Brown, and Burrow's 4-5. It's never worth it to spite somebody like that, if that's what you even want to call it. It doesn't work.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm spite. What I'm suggesting here is it smart? Is it
the Burrow on his own is still worth it?
Is it competitively intelligent
no.
to deprive that? Are you going to benefit enough? Certainly, depriving him of this other competitor is going to hurt them.
I think,
but is it going to help you enough to make it worthwhile?
I think this varies based on the player. So similar to the Bengals stack would be the Eagles. A.J. Brown is mid-second. Devontae Smith is early third. So you don't usually get Brown and Smith together like you can get Chase and Higgins together.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Hurts is the kind of player that to draft him naked, as they say, is maybe worth doing. It has to be after
ADP.
The
rushing touchdowns.
The rushing. It has to be after ADP. I would never draft Burrow without Chase or Higgins, except for one exception. Except for one in one situation where I did it. And that's when he went two rounds late.
Okay.
And I even asked the Discord, like, what do you guys think? The guy behind me has Chase. I don't know about Higgins. The guy behind me has Chase. I'm at the two. So this is like pick 6-11. Do I do it? Because Burrow's two rounds late. And, you know, I'm in so many. I'm like, I'm just going to do it. And that guy would have been ticked off.
Sure.
But he thought he was going to get Burrow two rounds late, not just Burrow. And
right,
that's
right.
Big.
Yeah,
that's a
right.
big advantage.
Right.
So I just decided, let me see what this can be. So anyway, that team is proud to have Mike Gesicki and Jermaine Burton on it.
Okay. Well, good luck with that.
Good luck with that is right. I just wanted to see. I went Burrow and Fields in that draft. Like, let me just see what happens if you Burrow naked is not Allen. Allen's way different. This I forced fantasy on you. Allen is like late third, late third.
I asked the follow-up.
But the thing about Allen again this year is you can draft Bills all day because none of them is gone.
Right.
Like Allen is the first Bills player picked. And if you want, name him.
You can find your way to any of these guys.
And you could stack them with four, never do it, but you could put any combination of Shakir, Coleman, Kincaid, Palmer, Moore, Knox, Samuel. I mean, those last three names are like last round picks. But any combination of those guys, you did it. Whereas other teams, the way drafts go,
mm-hmm.
you know, are more challenging. The Bills stack is always waiting for you if you pick Allen.
Right.
It's a reason to do it. Because you don't need anybody else on the team to go with him. Diggs was different. When they had Diggs, Diggs would go in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
And then, all right, what do you do? Yeah. If you are into fantasy and didn't know how heavily I am, I have a podcast with my guys, Jacob, Pat, and Davis, Tuesday mornings, ADP Chasing. You can find it on YouTube and join the Deposit Kingdom and all of that fun stuff. I forgot today, recently, I realized that Jim Furyk won the U.S. Open once. I forgot about him.
It's amazing he accomplished that with that funny little thing in his swing, at the top. Yeah.
Oh, Bulldog, you don't get that in sports anymore.
No, that's right.
You don't get unique swings in baseball or golf or tennis.
No.
We're going to send you through the factory.
Although, Scheffler's at least got the feet.
Scheffler has the feet.
He's got the feet. He does that thing. But yeah, there's not. Yeah, it's all. Although, I mean, there are extremes, right? Like, I've been all over the place with DeChambeau. I didn't like him at first. Then it kind of got around last year, U.S. Open, man of the people, high-fiving everybody, even in the heat of the competition. Like, okay, I think this guy's worked on it, and I like him. And then this year after the Masters, he really ticked me off. The way he talked about his game just really was – I thought he revealed something that he's been maybe trying to keep out of the public eye. But this has always been true. Like, watching him play is about – is as unpleasurable as I think watching any pro golfer play could
really?
Be.
Why?
It's so mechanical. He just looks like – he looks like one of those Boston Dynamics robots or something. Like, it's just all – it's so – it's such brute force. And every swing –
For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Is just, it just looks like the hardest thing ever. Like, I guess, like, look, I don't need you to be Freddie Couples, okay? But, like, the disparity between watching him hit a golf ball and DeChambeau hit a golf ball, they barely even look like they're in the same competition. And, you know, Couples is obviously generations ago, well, a generation ago. Uh-huh. So not exactly a contemporary, but it's just so, it looks like it was engineered in a lab.
Which it
kind of was. And, like, I don't hold doing that against him, but how it looks is just not – I just don't enjoy watching him hit the golf ball. He hits it a mile, and that's awesome, but it just – I don't know. It doesn't make me feel anything.
I'd like to hear Brian on this. We've talked about him many times, but I'd like to hear Brian on this at 6. I don't – have that opinion. Like, I don't have an opinion about DeChambeau's robotism or what. Like, it doesn't occur to me when I watch him, but I do like, you know, a stylish athlete. Like, Federer, this is Federer Djokovic to me a little bit.
Yeah.
Where Djokovic was more just sort of perfect. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say more than I really know, but Federer just had this all-time style panache, like just this grace to his game where it was like so appealing. And Nadal, nobody else really was like him. So there's that, you know, that might be Couples. Of all people today to write me an email about this very topic, the legend, John McEntee, as we get to the beginning of the U.S. Open, he... not only is not a DeChambeau fan, but he thinks, and again, this I don't really have my own opinion on,
mm-hmm.
he thinks the whole thing with the crowd is an act.
Right.
That it's all high-fiving the crowd endlessly, let him touch the trophy, these are John's words. He hates DeChambeau
mm-hmm.
because he thinks all of it is fake.
I totally understand that. That's sort of what I'm getting at when I say, like, I bought it, and then... at the Masters, he sounded like a sore loser, and I thought that was real and that it was a mistake by him because he's been working to overcome an image problem, and I think it was working. It worked on me for a while. And now, you always would, it was easy to be skeptical. Because when anybody has, you know, he's feuding with Koepka, he seems like a big meathead bully type guy. That is absolutely a stereotype judgment on just his physical build. He's just this big, and so he's trying to, you know, what he's trying to do? He's trying to make as much money, maximize his popularity. So how do you do? Oh, I'm man of the people. I'm Mr. YouTube. I'm hey, oh yeah, all the kids, yeah. And behind closed doors, just like, thank God I got through that. And when he talked like he talked, he just didn't seem like the gentleman he's been positioning himself as in that moment. Now, you know, he lost the Masters. It's justifiable to be upset, but it just made me wonder, is this whole thing just been, did he get a PR team and they told him, high five some kids, everybody will love you.
Well, you know, I've told you this, who else has had this reputation over the years in golf is Mickelson. When I talked to the one former pro on the air at the time and asked him, is there somebody on the tour that people have the wrong impression of? And he said, Mickelson.
Yeah.
He's like, he's not that guy that is always smiling and media friendly. Like,
right.
But, you know, I guess I can choose not to blast a guy for that. I mean, if it's fake, that's not cool. But he's also trying to beat you.
Right.
And if he can, in any way, almost any way, that's reasonable, mess with your head, you're distracted because you don't like this person because you think they have an unfair, good reputation, whatever it is. That's a psychological edge.
Yeah.
Can be.
I would also have to admit, and we got to get to a break here, that liking everybody the same is hard.
You don't have to do that.
Right. So I liked having DeChambeau, like a DeChambeau problem, and I'm going to tell you right now, admit it on the air, I missed it while it was gone. So the first opportunity to get it back felt good to me. You know, just from a sports fan, I don't watch the golf, and like, I like all the guys. No, you don't. You don't like all the guys. You got to like some and not like some others. And DeChambeau got back into the I don't like you. Camp.
I've never been a Spieth fan,
but I left the door open,
and that's I can't explain it. But I've never he comes across this way to me.
Yeah,
and I might be totally wrong, but yeah, right. I decided not to care.
Right,
yeah. I never pick him in the pick ten.
It's liberating not to care.
It is. You don't need a reason in terms of sports. Being a fan, you can do whatever you want. You don't need it to be right. Brian Koziol in 15 minutes on the Open, which starts tomorrow. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.